Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Thank you to the Mary Poppins at 2FM, Jenny Green, giving away another 1,000 euros to Aoife in Galway. Congratulations. It's Friday, the 22nd of May, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we ask Michael Corcoran, when is rugby coming back?
Munster now look to try and take control of it. O'Gara standing on the 10-metre line. Back with Dennis Leamy. O'Gara calling for the ball. Dennis Leamy tries to get it. Back towards O'Gara. He gets headed drop goal. On 10-22. Towards the post. O'Gara, what a drop of goal. Has gone between the post. After over 145 metres. The referee has blown the full-time whistle. Now Tottenham have been absolutely kicked. We're in first post.
I'm telling you, it was easier to play in that game than commentate on it. We also have Alan Cawley and David Snaid plotting the return of the League of Ireland.
Duffy. Oh, what a goal! What a goal that is! Wonder strike at the back post. What a finish, what a corner kick. Drilled to the back post. And a hell of a finish. The chance for goal of the season last week. But my God, what a finish. Well, Jordan Flores met that on the meet.
We have all the sports today, Donica. Our frontline hero is Ireland hockey captain, Katie Mullen.
Woodcroft, silence descends upon the stadium. Woodcroft into the circle at pace. Woodcroft scored the first time. Can she score the second? She's missed it. And it is Ireland who are going to the Olympic Games.
Oh, yes. I'm going right all the way back. And we speak to Armagh legendary shot stopper and greatest showman, Benny Tiernan.
Jamal Fauchet feeding it in. And good defensive play by Kieran McGeaney, the captain. It's all over. A fantastic day for Armagh. They have won the Ireland. Sam is going north once again.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Hearing live sport is something special, isn't it?
Yeah, I miss it.
I miss it. Well, I know I'm being a little bit selfish, and we're back, Marie. Rugby is back. We've dates. IRFU confirmed today there was an awful lot of good news today, and I think we should get straight to it. We're lucky to have the voice and soul of Irish rugby, Michael Corcoran. Michael, how are you?
Very good, Donica. Everything is good with you, I hope, is it?
I'm good. My hair's a little bit long, but never a complaint, Michael.
What's new about that?
We've missed chatting ball, but we got clear direction on a few things today. There's been an awful lot going on. Michael, we might start with just the return. What's it look like we're going to get back playing?
Yeah, the weekend of the 22nd, 23rd of August is the date that the RFU were looking at having the first series of interprovincial matches behind closed doors at the Aviva Stadium. So the last two weekends in August, 22nd, 23rd and 29th and 30th, would see two rounds of interprovincial championship matches, not just here in Ireland, but indeed in Wales, Scotland, South Africa and Italy as well. There would be some fixtures the following weekend. And the whole idea then is that the early part of September, you would have a scenario where you would have the knockout stages of the Pro 14 competition, followed later in the month in early October by the knockout stages and final of the Champions Cup, which rather bizarrely is supposed to be taking place in Marseille tomorrow. I got a text earlier to tell me about checking into my hotel, but it broke my heart a little bit, I have to say, just for a little bit. So, I mean, that's the roadmap as of now. There's a whole idea of playing maybe the outstanding Six Nations Championships games from this year, you know, in late October. And I know that international rugby, the idea is that international rugby would return in November, but nobody is as yet prepared to say exactly what form that's going to take, you know, given the fact that we don't know where we are, even as we've been hearing the news there about quarantine restrictions and maybe restricted travel between various different places. So there could be very possibility that you could have Ireland playing England home and away and maybe Wales home and away during the course of November, but that's only that part is speculation from my point of view. But as of now, the RFU are gearing up towards a return to play for the weekend of the 22nd, 23rd of August behind closed doors. And obviously they're looking at something in the region of a 6 or 7 week lead-in for the teams and the teams, you know, back into full training with a view to getting action back underway on the pitch.
Michael, there was a press briefing today with the IRFU CEO, Philip Brown. We're going to dissect all of that with you very, very shortly. But first, let's hear from Philip Brown.
Certainly, the announcement of CVC's investment in the Guinness Pro 14 League is very positive news. Not just for the financial benefits it brings, but also, as importantly at this time, is for the confidence it shows in the Pro 14 tournament and the game of rugby in general. Under this agreement, CVC will acquire on a phased basis a 28% share of the Pro 14 tournament. Their investment will allow Pro 14, together with the Irish, the Italian, the Scottish and the Welsh rugby unions, to invest in the sport while allowing the tournament the opportunity to achieve its full potential over the longer term. The mechanism for this is the creation of a new joint venture partnership with full responsibility for the commercial direction of the tournament on a 72-28 split in favour of Pro 14. All issues relating to rugby and its regulation continue to rest fully with the Pro 14 and its constituent unions.
Now, that was Philip Brown, CEO of the IRFU, speaking about that CVC investment. The news broke earlier. It seems to be very positive news, just given the reaction from those involved in rugby. Michael, just from the outside looking in, what are your views?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, there's, you know, CVC have invested money in the league in England previously. They see rugby as a sport that has probably been largely under-tapped, for want of a better phrase, in terms of commercial investment, commercial direction of competitions. And they're paying some, they're paying a big price, a lot of money to get involved in the Pro 14. As I said, they've been involved in the Premiership in England, and there is some discussion about them becoming involved in the Six Nations Championship also. This new joint venture between the Pro 14, like the unions and indeed CVC, if they can maximise the commercial returns, it means that there's more money going to flow into the games. That's the reality. They'll have absolutely nothing to do with how the games are played, or indeed how the games, anything to do with the actual physical running of the competitions. It's just purely to maximise the whole commercial sense surrounding the Pro 14 as it is on this occasion.
Michael, financial benefits aside, like Philip Brown said, it's the timing, isn't it? It's when a league needed a bit of support. It's perfect from CVC to come in now and nearly take away the vulnerability.
Yeah, I mean, it's guaranteed money, you know. I mean, each of the unions are, the RFU are entitled to a $5 million drawdown, which straight away, you know, which is their part of their share going forward. But you know, the reality is, Donica, we're in a situation where, you know, the RFU must have somewhere in the region of up to 500 employees between players and people behind the scenes and everything like that. I mean, it funds totally the game here in this country. And certainly we know that, players who are on international contracts have had to agree to pay deferrals. You know, the RFU are in a situation where, you know, to be perfectly honest about it, they will need financial help going forward. That's the reality there also. And I mean, Philip Brown did call on the government, to put a fund together to contribute not just to rugby but indeed to every sport, because every sport, even we've seen the scenario with the Football Association of Ireland, what they're trying to do in terms of trying to get the League of Ireland back up and running again. I mean, it isn't a bottomless pit, and certainly Philip Brown did sound a warning today that the cash reserves of the RFU could be gone in months if this continues as it does and rugby doesn't return for an even longer period of time.
So what does that mean, Michael, if they do run out of cash reserves, they don't get the funding that they're looking for from the government, and behind closed doors is the way that we're going to see rugby for the foreseeable anyway? Like, what position does that put Irish rugby in then?
All you've got to do is look at, you know, a world leader on and off the pitch in New Zealand. I know they're not the world champions at the moment, but they have announced in the last while, you know, huge cutbacks to things like the domestic game, to things like coaches on the ground, the size of super rugby squads and everything like that. I mean, when I see a country like that, you see a country like Australia having to apply to World Rugby for a loan of something in the region of $10 million for to keep them ticking over as well. I mean, they're like, I don't want to call them doomsday scenarios, but they're scenarios where, you know, South Africa, the international players there, a lot of them on contracts, they've had to take a 47% pay cut, or else, you know, they can move on and try and get a lucrative contract in either Europe or indeed Japan. And I mean, that's a scenario that could be further down the road from an Irish rugby point of view, if money doesn't start coming back in to the Irish Rugby Football Union, be it through the Guinness Pro 14 competition, or through the Champions Cup, or indeed through increased broadcast revenue or various sponsorship deals like that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they're saying 15 to 20 million in just missing out and finishing out the six nations this year. And Philip Brown saying that could cost a generation. And when you're looking at young players, the Craig Caseys, the Ryan Beards, you know, we have a model that works. It does need support now.
It does, and it's a model that is the envy of quite a lot of people around the place. But it's I would call it an expensive model in the sense that in terms of trying to run it, because there are academies and sub academies. But that's how the conveyor belt system has been working. That's the reality about it. You look at the expansion, from the 15s game into sevens, men and women. They're now competing very, very successfully on the World Series, and that again is another drain on resources. That's the reality there too. So, I mean, the international game is the game that generates the most income, and that's the one that realistically will have to start up rather quickly. And when I say rather quickly, I mean by the end of the season or by the end of this year, to generate money and to get the money flowing through Lansdowne Road again.
Michael, there was other news earlier on today as well that the Six Nations and Southern Hemisphere rugby body SANZAAR have entered a consultation process amid creating an aligned global rugby calendar. How do you think this would look, just even from a practical level? What would you, as somebody who covers international rugby all the time, like to see?
Well, there's always been a bit of chest beating going on about this, like with the Six Nations Championship on one side of the table, and you have SANZAAR on the other side, and they both have their own kind of windows where, they both seem to be reluctant to move. I did see a model that looked kind of pretty okay to me a couple of weeks ago, where you had a scenario where you had a Six Nations Championship from, I think it was 2022, from the year 2022, where you had a Six Nations Championship being played in the month of April and May, and that the Southern Hemisphere rugby situation, like the SANZAAR tournament there, moving back from a kind of a July-August date to there as well. And then you had the rest of the domestic rugby fitting around that with Pro 14 and indeed a Champions Cup also. I suppose if there's one positive thing from a rugby point of view to come out of this whole pandemic scenario, it's probably got people banging heads together, albeit over Zoom or Microsoft Teams rather than literally inside in the same room. But hopefully it'll get everybody thinking and moving in the same direction, because it's been long overdue. Dunica knows. I mean, I've travelled to various parts of the world in his company, and you have a scenario in the past where you've had Irish teams going to places like New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Fiji, Argentina at the end of our season, and the players have been flogged, and the other team have been in pretty good nick, and then you have the opposite come November. So, like, if we can all sing off the same hymn sheet, sing off the same playing calendar in terms of getting the priorities right, and I just think it's a good welcome development to see that SANZAAR and the Six Nations have been doing a lot of talking. And hopefully let's see that we can get the seasons aligned and just call it a season rather than seasons, because I think that can only be to the benefit of the game of rugby.
And the biggest thing there, Michael, is to eliminate self-interest, isn't it? Like, we do have a great model that we've earned over time in the Six Nations, but also SANZAAR is struggling at the moment. There needs to be a bit of coming together.
Yeah, I think Super Rugby is something that even, if you look at viewing figures down in New Zealand and Australia, I mean, viewing figures have gone through the floor. That's the reality about it. So they're even struggling, the Australian Rugby Union, at this moment in time, struggling A, financially, and B, they're struggling to try and tie somebody down to a new broadcast deal. The teams that are probably playing the most attractive rugby at the moment while we were playing rugby, we're in New Zealand, and I see that they're launching their own sort of New Zealand based competition in the next couple of weeks, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes, But certainly, look, you know, there has been a lot of chest beating in the past between, if I can call them vested interests, but people running different competitions. And that's one of the problems I have. I mean, you know, the Pro 14 on one side, you have Champions Cup on another side, you then have the Six Nations, then you have the British and Irish Lions, you know, you have the Top 14, you have the Premiership in England. I mean, that's all. Imagine trying to make out a fixture list with all those people in the one room, and that's only the Northern Hemisphere.
You're not
throwing the fact then of Sanzar, throwing the fact of Super Rugby, you know, the Mitre 10 Cup and various things like that, and it's a minefield, to be fair, and it's high time that this whole thing was sorted out once and for all.
Absolutely. Corky, we could chat rugby all night. In fact, after the show, I might WhatsApp you and we'll go continue it. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
No worries. Good to talk to you.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. With so many questions surrounding the status of the League of Ireland, we are joined by Alan Cawley and David Snade, journalist, to talk them through. But firstly, I'd like to extend our deepest condolences to Mark Rutherford and his family over the passing of his wife last night. Alan, I'm going to go to you on this one. I know that the League of Ireland community has came out in force to support Mark because he was such a big figure in the league for such a long time and someone that you played against.
Yeah, I would echo those sentiments as well, Maria. I'd like to pass on my condolences to Mark and obviously his family and kids. It's a horrendous situation. Things are bad enough as it is, but to have something like that as well, it must be desperately sad for all his family. And you're right, yeah, he's an almost like an iconic figure, really, in the League of Ireland. He's had so much success, Mark, over the years with different clubs, but most notably probably Shelburne. And I would have watched him when he was young, when I was very young and he was playing in the league. But I did have the honour of playing against him many times then when I was young and he was coming to the latter stages of his career. And a brilliant player, left winger, tricky winger, Marie. And yeah, it's just very, very sad to obviously wake up to the news this morning. And you can see online everybody passing on their condolences because not only was he a great player, but he's a really good lad as well, Mark. And it's desperately sad.
And it's actually hard, I think, as well, when you don't have the support of the football at the moment and the distraction of sport when you're trying to deal with things like this. And as it stands, David, we still don't know when the SSE Electricity League is going to come back. We imagine, anyway, that it'll be another while yet because there is still a lot to be decided. What is the latest?
Well, I suppose at the moment, if you're looking for definitives of what's actually going to happen, is we know that the four teams who are in Europe, so obviously Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Derry, they're going to be back. They're going to be back training from the 8th of June, and then the rest of the sides, and they're going to be in from the 29th of June. Now it's a strange moment because obviously there's quite dialogue going on between the strategic working group in terms of obviously the club reps and then the top brass within the FAI. UEFA's executive committee had been due to meet next Wednesday, and then more would have been obviously needed then from the FAI, but that meeting of UEFA's executive committee has been put back to June 17th. So basically clubs in the League of Ireland now have basically essentially kind of agreed to the FAI to actually give them another fortnight, really, just to finalise an actual financial plan for how clubs can actually get back to playing games behind closed doors. Because if we go back to over a month ago it feels even longer than that when I was chatting, it seems like that would be the worst case scenario for clubs because obviously they're so reliant on gates. Now it's become, as the days and weeks have gone on, it's become clear that behind closed doors is the only way. So essentially, that's now what's going to happen. So the FAI's medical doctor, my medical director, Alan Bourne, he had a Zoom meeting with most of the captains really of League of Ireland clubs, just questions with them that they had, and so that was earlier on in the week, and just to relay any kind of allay any fears that they had or just point, and it just seems that basically the four teams were going to be taking part in that tournament that the FAI had kind of scheduled for July to kind of, it's almost as a tester for getting back to football regular normally. They're going to be getting tested on Monday. And then the Monday after, so they'll have two tests before they're back training on June the 8th. And it's going to be then, once they're in there, they're going to be in groups of four or five in a training group. the players are going to have their temperature taken before they leave for training in the morning, and then before they enter the training ground again. And then when teams are back training, the message that's been relayed to them is that there'll be two tests a week. And another point which adds to the cost of this, because it's roughly going to be around the guts of €3 million, which could be needed all in all, is independent COVID officers essentially to make sure that these protocols are being put in place and are being maintained.
Alan, it's not a great situation really for football in Ireland to be in when you look at all the other leagues around Europe who seem to have a plan in place to return, and we're still waiting, wondering and trying to figure out, will there even be football in Ireland this year?
Yeah, and unfortunately, Marie, that's as a result of the negligence that's gone on for years in the league here, to think that we don't have professional industry up and running in 2020. And that's ultimately the case, really, that we find ourselves in. And the problem that you have with all the clubs trying to come together now with the FAI and trying to get to a solution that pleases everybody, you just can't please everybody, because all the self-interest involved in terms of your full-time clubs, your part-time clubs, you have amateur clubs, and they all have their own interests, and they all are kind of, and obviously there's no problem with them obviously looking after those interests, but that's why you have the divide in terms of all the top clubs. As David said, they're going back playing in that 14 tournament, but then you have some of the other clubs who would be below that are reluctant to go back, because obviously it hinges on the finances, as David also touched on there. And until that financial package is quite clear, and until the clubs feel as though they're compensated fully for the loss of the gate receipts, that's where the problems lie, and that's why you won't get a solution until that happens. And the money that was kind of mentioned last week, because to be fair to Niall Quinn, I have some sympathy for them and the FBI. They are trying to come up with solutions, but it's just that you're not going to get one solution to fit all, and clubs are going to have to make sacrifices. And the money that was mentioned last week, I think it was $1.1 million, and when you divvy that out amongst the 19 clubs, it was in the region of $50,000 each. Like, that just won't cut the mustard, Marie. And the figures that David mentioned there, you're talking around $3 or $4 million, I think, is exactly what's needed. And the question is where that money is going to come from in terms of the FAI and maybe some support from UEFA as well. But I think it is imperative that we get back playing football this season, and that it's not written off, because the mess that would kind of even lie further down the road in terms of players' contracts and all sorts like that, if we were to have no football this year, I think that would be even a bigger mess than what we're faced with right now.
David, you could see how that would divide the league. If you're struggling to pay wages, and then there's the chat of the cost of, you know, testing, you know, what's the sense from the clubs, the teams? What are you hearing around the league in terms of their feedback?
Well, as Alan was saying there, like, the league, it's fragmented in the sense that at the moment it seems to be kind of a split, even split really, especially among the Premier Division clubs, of getting back and playing behind closed doors. But it is so fragmented in the sense that you look at the top end, which are like the Docks and Shamrock Rovers, and then the bottom end when you have, say, around like Iffy and Harps. Like, these are clubs who essentially are, I wouldn't say on different planets, but it's on a different scale. So if there's, you can't really get a one-size-fits-all approach in terms of giving each club a lump sum of X amount that is across the board, because each club is going to need something different, you know. So in terms of the feeling, the clubs want the FAO to be definitive here and say, well, this is what we're offering, this is what's available to get back, and this is what's needed to get back. But at the moment, as I said, there's going to be another couple of weeks before the FAO, at least another couple of weeks, will be able to come back to them with that definitive plan. So I wouldn't say it's an element necessarily of just clubs being tired of it already, and finding out they want to get back as well. It's in everyone's interest to get back playing football and to finish this season. Players obviously want to get back. Like, they're unanimously, you know, essentially, they'll be getting tested and they'll be coming back. But then also, there's a small element of frustration, maybe the fact that, because it was put to me earlier on today, it was like, four of the lads off one team can go and play around the golf together, but can't go and just meet up and do a bit of training in a kind of their own environment at their club, you know. And that is, at the moment, is maybe, I wouldn't say it's beginning to grate, but it's club players now are just itching to get back, because maybe they're seeing progress around the place as well with what is happening. And like, if you're talking a while back, like, the trade-off between, you see what's happening around the country and so many people who have been affected by this, but then each day you're kind of also getting a bit of hope with maybe some of the numbers that are actually falling, and you're hearing about the details of the fact that maybe the virus is being able to be a bit more contained at the moment. But it's just up in the air, really, in terms of what the FAI can deliver for the clubs, because the clubs are beholden to them, really, in terms of, because they need playing behind closed doors without any financial package or financial support, be it some sort of emergency fund from UEFA or elsewhere. It just wouldn't be feasible.
Alan, when you think of money and you think of the FAI and the fact now that the FAI in Irish football needs money, and everything that has gone on, factoring everything that's gone on over the last couple of years, it's hard not to be concerned about how they're going to get this off the ground and keep the club satisfied, just purely from a financial point of view.
Yeah, of course, Marie, and that's where you would have sympathy for them, because obviously Niall Quinn and the regime that came in there with Gary Owens and them all, they've done quite a good job in terms of getting some government funding to obviously keep the show on the road in the first place without ever knowing that this was coming down the road. So they've inherited all this, and it's through no fault of their own. And as I say, to be fair, from what I've heard so far, they are coming up with solutions, but you're just not going to please everyone. And that's why I think you're going to have to try and get some buy-in from the clubs as well, and the sacrifices that will have to be made. But it will all hinge, like everything else in life, Marie, it will all hinge on finances. And I have no issue with the clubs either, kind of, not that they're digging their heels, but some of them who were kind of reluctant to go back playing behind closed doors. There's no point in them going back behind closed doors and putting their club in jeopardy that they'll get themselves into such a financial mess that they'll never, ever be able to come out of it. So I have no issue with the clubs whatsoever, or the chairman or directors or board, whoever, feeling that way. But it's just, until the FAI come to them with that package that suffices for obviously covering them for those games. And I know there was stuff mentioned with the whole streaming thing and all, but the streaming thing won't cover exactly what's been lost on a Friday night in terms of gate receipts. And ultimately, it will come down to a financial package in place, that there's money there that will say, okay, that's a lump sum of money and that will cover us for the next maybe 12 to 16 weeks or whatever it is, the course of the season that's going to run till we get it finished off.
And David, if we do get a mini tournament in sometime in July, where and when do you think exactly we'll be seeing it played?
Well, obviously the talk will be of the Aviva Stadium, and there's also talk of, well, in terms of games behind closed doors, and in Thomond Park was one that was mentioned. There's obviously in Athlone, Tallaght Stadium, but it seems that, yeah, the Aviva for this one in July, and it's more so centred, and it's around the middle of July, and it could really kind of just set the tone in terms of the feasibility for getting back, because, as I said, for the four clubs who qualify for the Euros, so the Docks, Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians, who slightly mind earlier, I'm sure I'll regret missing them off my list earlier, and Derry. So they're looking at that as a way of basically seeing, as I say, the feasibility of it. That's what would happen, and just obviously getting them ready for that European action. And that's another element on this, and it's another reason why finishing the season is important in terms of even for next season. And you have to look, like, you get qualified playing in Europe even for next year in clubs, and look, the money, because the money for in Europe and for qualifying for and playing in European football is so important to League of Ireland clubs. Like, it dwarfs essentially what you would get for winning the league. You get 110,000 euro if you win the league, and you get like nearly, well, you get over twice that just for going through one round in Europe. So it's imperative even for that, from that part. And even what Alan was saying earlier about getting the season going, because the clubs have obviously have budgets, and this is just, it's taken everyone by, I wouldn't say it is really surprising, no one would have foreseen what's happened to this season. And if we can get it to a point where there's matches being played behind those in closed doors in July, and then that leads to, in August, the season resuming, and hopefully some sort of package, or because whether that money comes from, or if the clubs can actually take some sort of hit, I just can't see them being able to take another hit. Like, they're taking hits constantly, and like it's another knock, and you wonder how some of them would recover from it. So, but just hopefully, fingers crossed by July, and by teams getting back, because as I said, like June 8th, so it's only a couple of weeks away when those four clubs will be back and they're training, and just how that all goes with how the tests, because like it's not only, see, you know what I mean, like kind of like two tests a week when you're back in training for all those clubs, that's a pretty heavy cost in it, and even making sure that it's done. So it's going to be, it's going to need everyone on board, but the will, I think, surely the will be there for it to happen.
Alan, just before I let you go, I have some news for Dunica and I want you to elaborate on it. Dunica was asking what Irish players we can look at in the Bundesliga, and this weekend we might have one. Conor Noss is ready to make his Borussia Mönchengladbach debut. 19 years of age, his mom is from Dublin, his dad is German, and he's an underage Ireland international. What's he like, Alan?
Yeah, an under 19 international, Marie, and he's hoping that he will get the chance. Because their playmaker that normally plays in that position came off after 66 minutes, I think they were saying, last week in the match with fatigue. And obviously the five substitutes that we're seeing in the games now, because they've had kind of mini pre-seasons and the clubs and the players are saying that they may be tired with a lot of games in quick succession. So it's going to give a lot of the young lads a chance. But obviously from our point of view and an Irish angle, it's this young lad that hopefully, I think he's named in the squad for tomorrow, and he is hoping to get his chance. An attacking midfielder, he's been involved in the games with Tom Owens under-19s towards the end of last year as well. So it would be great to see him. And just another reason for us to watch the Bundesliga games, Marie, because last week, I have to say, I watched Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich. And even though they're top quality sides, it's a tough watch behind closed doors, it really is. But at least there's football. And that's another reason why I think, from our own point of view here with the league, and obviously you had the story earlier coming out with the rugby teams and dates being set, I think once you see a couple of sports getting back, you'll see a knock-on effect with all the others as well. And I'm very optimistic. Like, I know we're talking there and saying clubs, and you may feel as though they're at loggerheads in terms of coming to an agreement. I'd be very optimistic, Marie, that we get football back in the next 6 to 8 weeks and kickstart the season, and hopefully we'll get it finished as well by the end of the year.
Well, we are with you, Alan Cawley, and David Snaith. Thanks so much for joining us. So there you go, Dunica, Borussia Mönchengladbach, yourself and Paul O'Connell can be fans.
That's my team.
Something to look forward to anyway.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Dunica, you're lucky you got the good news with the rugby. Hopefully the football will follow suit fairly quickly.
Yeah, and I think I like the idea that if there was a stadium for the League of Ireland to use and hype it up, Marie, because there's just been such bad things said about it so much that I think if we showcased it with all the tradition and history with the clubs, yeah, I'd much rather be watching it. Now, of course, we're Irish and we care, but that soulless German stuff, like, thankfully we have some interest today, but I'd much rather see Cork City, Dundalk, all of them hopping off each other. A bit of tradition, history would be great. Especially in Thomond. I'd have to draw a map for Alan Cawley. He'd never get there.
Yeah, it would be great to get it back. Something just to watch and look forward to, and a bit of distraction and something to talk about as well.
Very true.
Which helps. Now, moving on, our next guest has been a hero to many as a result of her heroics on the hockey field for Ireland. She's the Ireland hockey captain, but over the last few weeks, she's become a very different kind of hero, a frontline hero. Dunica, our favourite type. Katie Mullen, you're very, very welcome to Game On. How are you?
Hi, guys. Thanks a million for having me on. Yeah, I'm keeping well. I'm just at the end of another busy working week, so enjoying the Friday night feeling.
Oh, brilliant. So tell us, I know that you're making PPE, but tell us a little bit about the job that you do.
So I'm a medical visualisation engineer, and I work for a company. Normally we 3D print anatomical models to help surgeons complete their surgeries. But the last couple of months have been slightly different with the need for PPE and other things such as parts for ventilators. We've switched our skill set over to 3D printing anything and everything that they need in the hospital and that they need to help with COVID-19. So yeah, it's been challenging, but a steep learning curve and good fun.
Katie, how has the workload changed over the last few weeks? Of course, it's all we hear about, planes flying out to China to get it, but just for you, what's happened over the last few weeks?
Well, I suppose for me it's been very different because normally I would have been kind of 1 or 2 days working with the engineering, and the rest of the time I would have been training for what we thought was going to be Tokyo 2020. But now I am, I suppose, working 8 till 6, 5 days a week. So I've done more work in the last couple of months than in the last number of years. But it's been good for me because I've really bonded with my work colleagues over this time. I'm spending a lot more time on the phone and stuff to them. But I've been working from home, so it's all safe, social distance.
And what about training then, Katie? How are you fitting that in? Because, you know, I know the Olympics are postponed, but they're still going to come around, hopefully anyway.
Yeah, for sure. We've been training every day by ourselves. Learned very quickly that I couldn't be an individual sport athlete. I'll stick to the team sports because it's been very difficult going out and doing all those running sessions and gym sessions that we've been prescribed by ourselves. We're just itching to get back on the pitch. I think Donegal, you'll relate, you know, being from a sport where running is just a part of it, a small part of it that has to be done. And normally you push through those sessions to get back on the pitch and play the sport. So it's been challenging not being able to get that release.
Katie, I love that you said it twice, that like the bond you've made with not only your work colleagues but missing your teammates. But we've seen it even with the Michael Jordan documentary, the different types of leadership. He was probably someone that was tough on his teammates. That certainly isn't the case with you. You leave from the front with a smile on your face. The images of you at the World Cup in 2018, beaming, and then with your performance leading from the front. What's your style of leadership?
I suppose growing up, the best leaders for me were the ones that kind of led by example with what they did on the pitch, and it wasn't all about the lip service. So that's kind of a theory that I've tried to go by with my captaincy. And then the other thing is, I suppose, the smiles and everything, like the environment that we train in, it's so infectious. So when one person's up, then everyone's up quite quickly. So I've noticed the influence that that has on the group. And yeah, we have such a great bond as friends, and I think that that's what stands to us on any field, and I think that's very visible to the supporters and the public watching us.
Katie, how though? Because like I've been in those environments as well with radiators, people like yourself, the likes of Tommy Boy, like that are infectious characters, but the environment, the pressure, the big days, that can get on top of you. How did you manage to keep that? Like, looking at you going out for quarterfinals, semi-finals, it looked like you were having the time of your lives. I was jealous.
Yeah, well, I think there definitely was an element. We had never been on a world stage like that before, and so we were going to cherish every moment. And we didn't know when it was going to end. So every time you run out the tunnel, you kind of treat it as if it might be your last, especially in a tournament like the World Cup. And then it just sort of kept snowballing and it seemed to be working for us. But yeah, I think there's definitely an element of, you know, fake it till you make it sort of thing as well. But yeah, I learned a lot from that. And it was probably, I didn't even fully realise it until we got home.
Katie, it is tough now at the moment, though, to stay motivated and to keep training when realistically you should have been, or if we were in an ideal world, you should have been gearing up now for Tokyo, and it's pushed back a year. And even yesterday, Thomas Bach's comments did throw a little bit of uncertainty surrounding the potential of the Games definitely going ahead. How hard is it to kind of block out that outside noise and just keep focused on your big goal?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult, and I suppose the excitement was really building. I think we were only about 100 days out when the announcement was made that the Games would be postponed, 100 days out from when we would have been flying to Tokyo. So that was a very tough pill to swallow because we were very excited. But I think the thing about our team and the thing about hockey now in Ireland is it's not just about going to an Olympic Games. It's about the fact that we are now 8th in the world, and we want to push on and push up and hit into the top 5 in the world. And that's not just about an Olympic Games or one tournament. That's about how our sport now moves forward and keeps growing and the talent keeps growing. So yeah, it's a bigger picture thing, and it has been extremely difficult to keep everyone motivated and gearing towards next year with the uncertainty. But I suppose the comforting thing is that every nation is in the same position, and we just have to make sure that when the game does come around, we're in the best possible position to compete.
So how are you staying motivated then?
I suppose we're doing a lot of Zoom calls, and we actually do quizzes over Zoom, so it's not necessarily training. It's more just being in that team environment, slagging one another. A lot of our Zoom calls involve reliving funny stories of the past and those sorts of things, which has been really good, and especially for the younger, newer members of the squad that were maybe only in a couple of months before lockdown happened. It's been a really good way for us to continue to bond with them.
Katie, who's the Zoom nerd?
Zoom nerd would have to be Aisha McFerrin. You know, she's the bubbly one that arranges these things and gets everyone talking very quickly. So and she's definitely chief of that.
Is she buzzing in from Germany?
Yeah, she joins the Zooms from Holland, so she's getting on well over there. I think things are slightly different, and she's been able to get on a pitch a little bit over there now in the last week. So, yeah, it's strange times.
Well, we hope that you are able to get back on a pitch very, very soon as well. Although with all the hours you're putting in, Katie, I don't know where you're going to find the time and the energy, but we really appreciate you making the time for us this evening. Katie Mullen, Ireland hockey captain, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM.
OK, in the modern world of bland characters, sports world of bland characters and PC soundbites, it can be really hard to get to know our talented stars. That wasn't the case with Armagh's All-Ireland winning goalkeeper Benny Tiernan, whose cat-like reflexes, aerobic saves were only trumped by his colourful personality and comic genius, also his dashing good looks. For 13 seasons, it felt like he jumped out of the TV, and thankfully tonight he joins us. Benny, how are you?
How are you doing, Donica?
I'm very good, yourself?
Somebody else for a change, you know?
It certainly is. How's lockdown treating you, Benny?
I wouldn't call it isolation. I would call it desolation at this stage. No, listen. I'm still working away. I'm principal of a school up here in the north of Ireland, so we're open every day because we have children of key workers in the school. So we're busy enough. But obviously, like every sports junkie in Ireland and across the world, we're missing sport. I think if somebody put chess on at the minute, I'd be enthralled by it. So, you know, rapidly looking forward to a return to some form of normality within sport.
It's hard for the kids, isn't it, Benny? Like, I know they're stuck at home with their parents, missing their friends. Just as somebody involved in education, what advice do you have for all the parents who are at home climbing the walls at this stage?
Well, it's very difficult for parents, especially now when as you say, you're stuck indoors. Fortunately, the weather has been great that at least the children can get outside. However, there is the aspect of online learning as well, where parents have certainly have to transform themselves into the role of a teacher, and that can't be easy. And I know it's certainly not easy for a teacher to do it, never mind a parent to suddenly become a teacher. So huge respect for the parents out there across the whole of Ireland who are attempting to maintain their sanity and to improve their children's education. But it's tough going, and it's tough to keep children enthusiastic about it as well. But the advice I would give them is to do as much as they can and to maybe maximise this whole pandemic into the extent that you're spending a lot of time with your children. You know, I have a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old at home with me for 9 weeks, and believe you me, to handle that is something in itself. But we've enjoyed it to a certain extent. We're doing things as a family that you never really get the time to do in other aspects. So maximise this negative pandemic and make the most of it if you can without climbing the walls.
So have you made the kids sit down now and watch some of your good old days?
I actually, would you believe this, I watched the All-Ireland final in 02 for the first time with my family about 3 weeks ago, and I'm amazed how much weight the camera puts on. How much weight the camera put on. But we were actually watching it. The funny thing about it was we were watching it, you know, and for the first time I've seen it, and you're so engrossed in it and you're seeing things that you didn't notice in the day, and you're probably thinking it was a wonderful match when it probably wasn't that dynamic. But I was sitting beside my current wife, and she was saying, as the game got towards the end, it was a very tight match with Kerry, you know, and we missed a few chances, and I could see her squirming in the seat. I had to tell her, you do know, Pat, that we did win this game, you know. So it's been good to watch the reruns, you know, and, you know, they've become nearly part of your social occasion now. My son, he's saying to me, Dublin's playing Mayo, will we watch that? And things that maybe you wouldn't have done, and maybe you're watching, and you're talking about football a lot more, and you're talking about sport. But the golf course is opened on Wednesday there, so I was like a child on Christmas Day, getting out to whack a ball about 50 yards down a fairway. But, you know, we are all looking forward to a return.
Benny, when we look at your teams, the McGeanies, the McNulties, they're intense, they're winners, and then there was you in the middle of it, like, who just, like I said, kind of nearly jumped out of the TV for your personality, the fun, the love for the game. How did you, you know, how did you manage it with that group, with the intensity of some others?
Well, I suppose, Duncan, you'd realise this, Marie, you'd realise this, that in every team event you need a different characters or different characters in the team and the dynamic. And in that way, you know, somebody as sort of manic as myself and maybe, you know, effervescent would be, you know, it's a godsend in ways. But for managers who try to tame that, it might have been a problem as well. But I think for every Kieran McGeaney, you need, you know, Tyrone had Muggsy and people like that there. And every team has characters who, you know, who show up and are the focus of some attention, you know. But people will think that because you're a character, you didn't take the game that seriously. But obviously you did. But we had great fun. And, you know, when you look back in the days, and now that you're retired, and you look back, and Donnie, you're a wee bit early yet, but you look back in the great times, and as you get older, those times mean so much more to you as you get older, because during lockdown, you know, our WhatsApp group would have been very quiet in Armagh over the last couple of years, and it's sort of sprung to life again because we're beginning to communicate with each other. And the slags and the insults are flying, so I'm in my element. But, you know, you need different, a variation of characters and a variation of memories that come with all those journeys in sport.
You commanded so much respect, though, Benny. Like, you know, character aside, the way that that your teammates would come to you, ask for advice, positional advice, you just seemed to have it.
I don't know what it was. I grew up with Kieran McGeaney and the McNulty boys, for example, you know. And regarding the defence in front of me, you know, I would never have been one that had been roaring and screaming. You know, it would have been all positive, you know, thoughts going through my mind with them. And we obviously were great friends. So it was very easy. I think it's a bit like teaching, Marie, where, where you're trying to get a message across without roaring and screaming at people, where you try to bring the best out of them and you tell them what they're doing well. But also that when you do, like, for example, Geezer, you know, would have come in with the last 5 minutes of a game and he would have said, put the ball on top of me. Or if I'd have said to Geezer, you know, take your man out, he would have done that. Now, and there's not everybody Geezer would have listened to, and I'm obviously privileged that he was listening to me. But, you know, the respect is both ways. You know, you like to think that, you know, that I had a huge amount of respect for those boys. I was only a wee goalkeeper, as I said, a wee pudgy goalkeeper. And they were taking all the hits and doing all the running. And, you know, for a team to win, you need respect for every one of them, and getting that message across is pivotal if your team is going to succeed.
Well, they certainly knew that you had their back, but just looking at the way football's gone, the athletes, the young athletes, and do you look at it now and think, I wish I had that kind of support around me, or are you thankful for your time in the game, Benny?
I think the word athlete and me shouldn't be ever used in the same sentence, but, you know, I'm actually, you know, I'm sort of comparing myself to my son, you know, who in lockdown, for example, he's on the fringes of minor and under-21 county teams, and even in lockdown, he's watching his diet and he's training, he's doing two or three sessions around the garden and he's running 10K, and I'm actually going to get a DNA test. I'm not sure, you know, he's even involved with me in any shape, way or form. He's 6'2" and skinny, like, and but the game has moved on so much, Danica, you know, the days of, you know, we're professional in everything but our amateur ethos, because their attitude, the modern day county footballer is so professional, it's unbelievable. Even at club level, you know, where diet and nutrition and training and watching over themselves and alcohol intake and all that they're putting through their bodies is now so carefully monitored. Yeah, and it's a credit to these young fellas and these young county footballers who are devoting so much of their time to this cause now. You know, the two nights a week that we did, or the three nights a week that we did, and we were able to play club football, but it's become so demanding now. But if you were to ask any county footballer in Ireland, and people are complaining about how much they're doing and, you know, how little of a social life maybe they're having, if you were to ask any of those county footballers, they want to be there or they wouldn't be there. So it's getting that balance, but I have huge admiration for them. I don't think I would have fitted in totally with the dynamic of the modern-day county footballer now.
Benny, we're having a lot of conversations and debate on this show about playing behind closed doors. And today, Bernard Brogan came out and said that the whole debate is baffling, that fans are amazing, he loves every bit of atmosphere they created, but he would take his hand off to represent his county, spectators or not. He plays the game because he loves it, and that is the end of it. What are your thoughts?
I would agree with Bernard to a certain level. You know, I suppose I'm a bit of, you know, I loved the whole dynamic of the game. It wasn't just the game itself, Donegal Murray. It was the build up to the game. It was the bus to the major matches, going through Clonus, where you saw the streets thronged with fans, you know, where you were soaking up and drinking up the atmosphere. For me, it would be a bit soulless, nearly, you know, a game played behind closed doors. We saw the Bundesliga last week, you know, we were all German football fans for about 10 or 15 minutes until we realised, you know, it wasn't. Without the fans and without the supporters, without that excitement and anticipation that they bring, you know, it's a wee bit diluted. And it's nearly equivalent to a challenge game, you know, played behind closed doors. But a county footballer will want to play football. I always wanted to play football. Donnelly, you always wanted to play. It didn't matter how many people were there. But it's certainly a much diluted version of what we love and what the supporters love.
The empty stadiums, one thing that you would probably not miss is the abuse you'd be getting from behind the goals, I'd say.
I used to have a few Patriots who would follow me from one half to the next. But listen, that was all part of it, you know. Those were memories that I actually look back on with great fondness, even though I was probably getting insulted to the high extreme. But they're all part of the story that is football and that is sport. And, you know, I was actually talking about them during the week. Some of the stories were hilarious. You know, the conversations I would have with supporters when I should have actually been playing football. But it's all part and parcel of it, you know.
I'd say, Benny, they're probably conversations that we can't have on the radio. Look, Benny Tierney, absolute legend. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
And the same to yourself.
Thanks so much. A great Armagh team there, Donegal. When we're talking about documentaries, Fly on the Walls, I would love to have seen one about some of the GA teams, and I think that Armagh team would be one that would catch my interest.
And he'd be front and centre at it, wouldn't he? You can understand it. You can have the intense guys, but you need the guys that are fun.
Game on 2FM.